We're up to Perek Yud Zayin. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Masa Damesek. Okay, now we continue in all the various, we continue in the series of prophecies describing the downfall of the various nations. And after we spent two parakim discussing the downfall of Moab, we now go to their neighbor, Aram. Aram, people call that today Syria. I don't know if that's 100% correct. Aram was a very large area in ancient times. There were many mini-states within Aram. There was, it appears that Damesek was a section to itself. Okay, but whatever that is. Damosek, or Damesek, Damascus, was the capital of the nation of Aram. Now, although this parak appears to describe the downfall of Aram, it really describes more the downfall of the Malchus of Yisrael. As we had this, we learned about this extensively in the beginning of Sefer Yeshayah, the downfall, the golus of the Aseres HaShvatim, and a lot of that is repeated again. There's a lot of repetition in Sefer Yeshayah discussing, it's not repetition, it's just different angles, different facets, different ideas, but it focuses on the same event. So here we discuss the downfall of two major nations. Two different major monarchies. The Malchus of Aram, together with the fall of the Malchus of Yisrael. Now remember, at the very beginning of Sefer Yeshayah, we learned that there was an alliance between Ritzin. Ritzin was the king of Aram, and Pekach ben Remaliah, who was the king of the Malchus of Yisrael. They formed an alliance to conquer the Malchus of Yehuda, who was then under the leadership of the king Ochos. Ochos was a wicked king. He was the father of Chizkiyahu. He was a wicked king, Ochos, and he was felt threatened greatly from this alliance between Aram and Pekach ben Remaliah that were about to conquer the Malchus of Yehuda. Yeshayah came to Ochos and told him, "Do not worry, nothing will happen. In a very short time, Aram will cease to exist. It will be destroyed. And then the Malchus of Yisro will be severely weakened, and they will not be able to attack you. But if you do want to worry about something," Yeshayah told Ochos, "worry about Sancheriv, because Sancheriv will come eventually and conquer and come to attack Yerushalayim. Well, he will succeed in conquering most of the Malchus of Yehuda, and will poise himself to conquer the Malchus of Yerushalayim. And at the very last moment, your son, who will be a tzaddik, he will galvanize Jewish people to study Torah, and in that merit, the army of Sancheriv will die suddenly." So here we are describing the downfall of Damosek. Aram, the capital of Aram, is always referred to with the word Damosek, which that was the capital. So Masa Damosek, Hinei Damosek, Musar Mir. The time will come where Damosek will be Musar, be removed from a city. There will no longer be a city, Damascus. It will be completely obliterated. Obviously, the Damascus that exists today is just as obviously has been rebuilt. Is it the exact same Damascus that was in ancient times? Perhaps. Or maybe it was just a lot of these old cities today, they're not built on the ruins of the old city. They built it nearby, within a very short distance, but it's not necessarily built on in the same exact location. But it could be it is. It depends on different cities. They're different. Each city is different. The Haitza...
It would be a bad thing to happen to today's Damascus.
Correct. The Haisad Mi'i will be, Mi'i means a wasteland. The Mitsudos translates the word Mi'i tel, a mound. A mound of, Pasuk concludes, Mapola, a mound of waste, of ruin, a mound of rubble. Mi'i Mapola. Mapola means ruin, Mi'i means a mound, a large mound of stone and rubble. That's all that will be left from the ancient city Damesek, the capital of Aram. Pasuk Beis, Azuvos Arei Aroer. Now this is a difficult pasuk because Aroer is not a city in Aram. Aroer is a city in Moab. It was once a city in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what do we mean it's in Eretz Yisrael? Because Moab, you have to go through the steps. Originally, on the eastern side of the Yarden was the nation of Moab. And one of the major cities of Moab was the city of Aroer. Along came Sihon, Sihon Melech Og, and he conquered the land from I'm sorry, Sichon Melech HaBashan. Og Melech HaBashan. Sichon Melech HaMoiri. And Og Melech HaBashan, sorry. Sichon, the king of Emori. And he conquered this land from Moab. If the land would have remained in the possession of Moab, when Reuven and Gad and Chatzit, Shevet, Menashe wanted to take their portion of Eretz Yisrael and the other side of the Yarden, they would not have been allowed, because the Pasuk says, Al Totsar Es Moav, Yal Tiskar Bo Ba Milchama. You're not allowed to cause pain to the nation of Moab. It would have been forbidden for Moshe Rabbeinu to give them this land. So how did it come about that Moshe was permitted to do so? Because Sihon, the king of Emori, conquered the land from the Moavim. It now became a land of the Emori, which there was no prohibition, and therefore Moshe conquered it from Sihon and gave it to Reuven, Gad, Chatzit, Shevet, Menashe. So really, this was once upon a time a city that belonged to the nation of Moab. And then it was conquered by Sihon. And then it was conquered by the Jewish people. And then what happened years later, Moab once again waged war against the Bnei Yisrael living in Reuven, Gad, Chatzit, Shevet, Menashe, that were living there, and took it back. And once again it became part of the nation of Moab. And indeed, in the last parak, we learned that Moab, when we described the downfall of Moab, one of the cities listed, there were many cities and the different parts of their geography which are described in the previous two parakim, and indeed, one of those cities is Aroer. So the question now is, what in the world is this doing here when we describe that Aroer is going to fall at the time when the Sanherib conquers the nation of Aram, which is not, it's a different area, it's much further south, if I'm not mistaken, towards where Aroer is. So the answer is, there are many answers. One answer is, Ein Hachinami, there was another Aroer. There was an Aroer in the land of Moab, and there was an Aroer in the land of Aram. Two different Aroers. And in fact, the Pasuk goes on to say that it had many suburbs, many minor cities that relied upon the major Aroer that was like the capital of this entire region. Okay, that's one answer. Another answer, there are different midrashim which describe this in different. There are different. It's described a little bit differently in each midrash. Is that in Aram they had 365 temples. Churches where they worshipped different gods. Each temple worshipped was only one day.
A different one for each day.
They would rotate. They were every single day, they would worship because there was a different god for every day of the year, and that was the nature of the idolatry, their beliefs there in the land of Aram. The Jewish people, they took a liking to this. Unfortunately, they were. We know that Avodah Zarah was rampant in these times. They took a liking to the nation of Aram and their idol worship, but they went further. They worshipped all 365 gods every single day. They were more religious. They were machmir. Why only worship once a day? Only Jews would do this. So it says here, what?
It's an Esther Rabba.
Esther Rabba, correct, right. So, okay, the Esther Rabba says a little bit differently. It says that they also, okay, it's a very common, there are different midrashim. Okay, this is just the basic gist, but the basic gist of what happened is that they worshipped, they liked the gods, whatever, they worshipped the same gods as the nation of Aram, and therefore, when the Churban came upon the nation of Aram, simultaneously, there was a Churban that came upon the Jewish city of Aroer. Aroer, I don't know, it was part of Moab, but it seems it was also part of the Jew. Before it was conquered by Moab, it seems it was still in Jewish hands. To some degree, we know one thing for sure, Aroer at one point in time was definitely within the control of the Jewish people. That's clear. When it was given over, when Moab came and reconquered and took it back to itself, it's not clear. With the previous parakim, we learned that there was a point in time where it was again back in the hands of the Moabim and it was destroyed. But there was still some point in time where it was in Jewish, under Jewish control, and there was some event which is not clear when Aram was destroyed and their major capital, and when they were destroyed, simultaneously the city of Aroer in Jewish, under the Jewish control, whatever that means, was also destroyed. Why? Because there was this relationship, there was this parallel, that they worshipped the same gods. The Jewish people took upon themselves to worship the gods of the nation of Aram, and when Aram was destroyed, there was a punishment that took place for the Jewish people. That's what's alluded to here in some degree in the words of this pasuk. But again, the simple meaning is, you want to learn the pasuk very simply, you mean simply there was another city called Aroer that was in Aram, just like we find today. There are other places in the world that have their, they have a New York, right? I'm sure there's a New York, and there's a, there are all these, every country has a, as they try to imitate, they try to copy some of the names of other countries, other cities. So Azuvos Arei Aroer, the cities of Aroer will be abandoned. La Adarim Tiena, it will be for sheep. Sheep will pasture and roam in these lands. The Ravitsu, they will lie down. The Ein Machamer. If you're in a civilized area, if you're in a populated area, and sheep are coming on your front lawn and lying down, you get out and they're eating up your the grass. They're eating up the crops. They're destroying the crops. The owner of the home, the owner of the field, will get up and chase them away. Will not allow animals to freely graze and roam upon one's property when it's causing damage. You will put an end to it. So that's not going to be the situation in the cities of Aroer, because since there will be complete devastation, korban, there will be no survivors. No one will be living to chase away the sheep that graze upon the fields in the, what used to be the city of Aroer. V'ravtsu, the sheep will lie down. V'ein macher, the sheep will not have to feed them. In 2 minutes, the owner will come with a stick and beat it and chase it away. Pasuk Gimel, v'nishbas mivtsar me'Ephraim. So this goes back to the beginning of Sefer Yeshaya. There was an alliance between Pekach ben Remaliah, the king of the Malchus of Yisrael, where whose capital was in Shomron. And we know that the Malchus of Yisrael is called by the name Ephraim. Many times throughout Tanakh, Ephraim is another word for the Malchus of Yisrael, because the founder of the Malchus of Yisrael, the one that rebelled against Rechavam, was Yeravam ben Nevat, and Yeravam ben Nevat was from Shevet Ephraim. So it was always called after Shevet Ephraim. And at this moment in time, there was an alliance between Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekach ben Remaliahu, the king of Shomron, the king of the Malchus of Yisrael. And now once Aram ceases to exist, so the entire strength and backing of Ephraim is gone. The Nishbas will cease to exist, Mivtzar, fortification by Ephraim. If Ephraim doesn't have the support of Aram, so Ephraim is helpless. Umam locha bida mesek. And no longer will there be a kingdom from the city of Damesek, which refers to Aram, the capital of Aram. Ushaor Aram, the survivors, the remnants of Aram, kichvod b'nei Yisrael yiyu, will be diminished like the honor of the Jewish people, nu'um Hashem tzvokos, just like at this moment in time, the Malchus of Yisrael was on the way down, they were threatened from Sancheriv. Same thing, that's what's going to happen to the nation of Aram. Together, these two nations will diminish, will come to an end. That's a very interesting, very beautiful idea I saw. Very interesting nuance in this pasuk I saw in the Sefer B'Shem Amra. It's a very, very beautiful sefer called B'Shem Amra. He quotes like little snippets of the major Mefarshim. Makes it very easy to learn the Nevi'im. This he doesn't say who this is from. I assume this is his own idea. It's a very simple idea, but it's a very interesting nuance in the pasuk. We're describing here two nations in this pasuk, the Malchus of Yisrael, whose capital is Shomron, who's also called by the term Ephraim, and the Malchus of Aram, whose capital is Damesek, and of whose king is Ritzin. When it comes to Aram, we refer to it by its capital, Damesek. When we refer to the Malchus of Yisrael, we would expect it to parallel Aram and refer to Shomron, as it does many other places in Tanakh. Shomron is the capital of the Malchus of Yisrael, just like Damesek is the capital of Aram. Why then in this pasuk, where the two are very closely tied together, as indeed the pasuk says that Usha'or Aram, the remnant of Aram, will be kichvod b'nei Yisrael, just like the malchus of Yisrael. Both nations will decline simultaneously due to the threat of Sancheriv. There was an alliance between the two, and now Melech Ashur, the king of Sancheriv, Melech Ashur, is coming to conquer them both. So there should be a parallel that we should use the word v'nishbas mivtzar shoimroin. Should not there not be a parallel? So the answer is no. Shomron is not the real capital of Klal Yisrael. The real capital of Klal Yisrael is Yerushalayim. It's a rebellion. It's true. It's a very delicate matter. How it's a break off. But yeah, you know, there's legitimacy. All the Nevi'im recognize they treat the king, even though it was rebellion, it was Rechavim, he was the king of the entire Klal Yisrael, of the 12 Shvatim, the way it's supposed to be. David and Shlomo, they were the kings of the entire Klal Yisrael. David's son, Shlomo's son, Rechavim, took over the Malchus, but this person, Yeravim ben Nevat, rebelled. And he took with him 10 tribes. He's a Moab Malchus. So you would expect the entire kingdom is illegitimate. If it's illegitimate, Yeravim ben Nevat does not have a din melech. Yet we find the Nevi'im treating with great respect the kings of the Malchus of Yisrael. So is it a legitimate Malchus or is it an illegitimate Malchus? So the answer is both. And to some degree it is legitimate and it was sanctioned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have all in Shmuel, Melachim with Elisha, he was told to go and anoint this person, Yehu. They're all different. It's a very complex matter. But to some degree, the Malchus of Yisrael is legitimate. And to some degree, it's illegitimate. In this pasuk, we're focusing on the illegitimate aspect of the Malchus of Yisrael. And that's why we refuse to refer to the capital by its name, because it's not the real capital. The capital of Eretz Yisrael is Yerushalayim, not Shomron. And therefore, although we have here Damesek, don't dare say Shomron is a parallel to Damesek. Yerushalayim is the capital, not Shomron, and therefore we refer to it by the word Ephraim. Keep next pasuk Dalet, V'hoya b'yamahu. It'll be on that day, Yidal Kvod Yaakov. On that day, when Aram falls, their partner falls, their support, their strength will be diminished. So Yidal means to be lowered, will be bent. Yidal means lashon of dal, to be poor. They will be diminished, their stature. Yidal will be diminished, this Kvod Yaakov, the stature of Yaakov. Umish man bisaro, the fat of their meat, Yerozeh, will become lean. This will happen to the Jewish people, the Malchus of Yisrael at that time. Pasuk Hey, V'hoya, and will be Ke'esof Kotsir Kama, that Sancheriv, after he succeeds in conquering Aram, will proceed to conquer the Malchus of Yisrael and send into exile the 10 Shvatim. So in this pasuk we describe, we compare the conquest of Sancheriv to a farmer coming to harvest his crops. The Haya, it will be Ke'esof, just like a farmer gathers Kotsir Kama, he gathers the grain that is standing. Kotzer means the grain that is kotzer literally means to cut. In this context, it means the grain that is ready for harvest. The grain that's standing, it's fully grown, it's now ready for harvest. He comes into the field, he puts his arm, one arm, he takes his left arm, and he wraps around a large collection of of wheat or barley that's coming out of the ground, and with his right, he takes the sickle, and he gives one cut, and he cuts it off from the ground. He removes it from the ground. That's going to be the same with ease. There's no difficulty. You just collect a large amount, and in one shot, you cut. That's how easy it will be for Sancheriv to conquer the Jewish people. He will just put his arm around the people and cut them, pick them up, and send them off into Golis, and they will be lost for good, according to some opinions. Just like Kotsir Kama, just like the Kotsir, the one who cuts the Kama, Let me just see how it translates the word katsir. Maybe it refers to the person who's cutting. In the Mitzudos David, it's Pasik Hey, Voya Ke Esov Katsir Hadava Yeh Doimek Kimo HaKoitzer. So it appears, Asher B'yodoy Ha'achas Oisef Shivlei HaKama. So it appears that the Mitzudos translates the word katsir, referring to really the person that's cutting. The farmer that's cutting the grain, the kama, the standing grain, uzra'o shibolim yiksar, with his arm, he cuts, with his other arm, he actually cuts with the tool, the grain, the hoya, and it will be kimlaket shibolim, it will also be like someone who gathers the stalks, the emek rifa'im, in the valley of rifa'im. Now, there are different interpretations for the sixth, last part of the pasuk. This refers to a second wave. After he succeeds in gathering the main groups of people living in the Malchus of Yisrael, there will of course be people that escape. People will realize what's happening and they will flee. He will then seek out every person. Anyone who tries to escape, Ashur will run after. They will seek them out. That refers to the Valley of Rifa'im. The Valley of Rephaim, according to one interpretation, was a place where it was very dry and grain did not grow. And the few stalks of grain that grew in isolation. There was a stalk here, a stalk here, a stalk there, a stalk there, in the main, the homeland, the fertile part of the land. So the grain grew in large clusters. So it was very easy to harvest and to collect a large amount of grain. But in the land of Rephaim, you only had little stalks here and there. So when most people wouldn't even bother to go and harvest grain because it's too difficult, it's not worth the effort to go get one here. But those that did go to the land of Rephaim to harvest the crop, you would have to cut a stalk one at a time because each one was separate. That's what Sancheiriv will do to the remnant of the Jewish people. He will not allow anyone to survive. Anyone that escapes, he will seek them out and cut them off the earth, just like one cuts off single stalks of grain in the land of Rephaim. So according to the similar interpretation of the Pasuk, there are two different types of harvest taking place. The first half of the Pasuk, which is broken up into two steps, V'hoya ke'esov kotzir kama, it's going to be like one, that's like an introduction. That's a general introduction to the entire Pasuk. The conquest of Sancheiriv will be like a farmer who harvests his grain. And now we describe more detail. What does he do? He takes Uzra'o with his arm, Shibolim Yiktsar, with his arm. Well, really, the first two parts go together. Like he gathers with one arm the katsir, with his other arm, shibolim yiktsar, he actually cuts. So the first two expressions, we'll learn this approach, the first two expressions is describing one action of harvest. With one arm, he gathers the grain together, and with the other arm, he cuts. And then it describes anything that's left over will be just like in the Valley of Rephaim, every single stalk of grain is cut individually. Anyone that survives the first action, the first conquest, will be cut off piece by piece. That's one interpretation. Another interpretation, this is very nice, it fits parallels what we learned in the beginning of Yeshaya, that when Sancheiriv conquered Eretz Yisrael, it was done in three waves. There was the Eiver Hayam, there was the seashore along the Mediterranean. I don't remember the exact terms. There were three expressions in the Pasuk. There were three waves of conquest. The first two were light, was Kal, and the last one was hard. The first conquest was along the Mediterranean, was along the west. That was the land of Zevulun and the other region. Then the second conquest were the people living on Eiver Hayarden, Ruvain, Gad, Chasi, Shevet, Menashe. And the third conquest was the Galil, the metropolis, was the center of Eretz Yisrael. The first two waves of conquest, there was not very much bloodshed. It was easy. It was Kal. He was able to gather up the people and ship them out of the land into Galus. The third wave of conquest was very difficult. It was covered. It was heavy. People fought back. They weren't willing to leave so quickly, and there was a lot of blood, a lot of loss of life. That's what we learned in the beginning of Sefer Yeshayah 3, and this idea is brought out many different places in describing the galus of the Aseres Hashvat and the three waves. So some want to take those three waves of conquest and put that into the pasuk here, and that's what is it, the first conquest. So pasuk hey, v'hoyo ke'esof kotzir kama. That's number one. The first conquest will be like someone gathers kama. The second wave will be the next expression, Uzra'o Shibolim Yiktsar. And the third, the more difficult conquest, is with the words Vahoya Kimlaket Shibolim Be'emek Rifoim. So that's why we have three different expressions describing the conquest of Sancheirif, corresponding to the three different the waves of conquest mentioned in the beginning of the Sefer. Pasuk Vav. V'nishar bo o leilos. Now, although he will try to conquer the entire Malchus of Yisrael, there will be leftovers, there will be survivors. There will be o leilos. O leilos means single berries. O leilos refers to unripened grapes. In other words, there will be a few survivors. Kinokef zayis. That they will be like those that you nokef means to bang on an olive tree. After you collect the olives, there are always a few that are left over on the tree. Most of the olives, they fall off by themselves, or if you just give a little bang, they come down. But there are stubborn olives. There are stubborn olives that remain high on the tree, which don't come down so easily. And you have to bang the tree very, very hard. Sometimes it's just not worth it. It's not worth the effort to retrieve those isolated olives that remain on the tree. That is what is going to remain from the Jewish people. V'nishar bo olilos, unripened grapes. The unripened grapes will be similar to olives. Interesting idea. Olives are not grapes. Grapes are not olives. But yet in this pasuk, it compares one to the other. They're both similar in the same idea that they're not completely, they have not ripened. And being that they have not ripened, they're still firmly attached to their source, to the tree. They don't come off easily. There will be kinokev sites, like the olives that you need to bang on the olive tree to remove. How many will be left? Shnayim, shalosha, two, three, gar girim, berries. Okay, two or three berries. Now berries are not grapes, they're not olives. It's a different type of fruit. It's very poetic how Yeshayah is describing the survivors. Immature grapes, immature olives, immature berries. Birosh omir. Omir means the very top of the center branch of the tree. It's used by the Turks.
Emir.
Emir is a title. So it comes from this word. Emir, etymology of, how do you say it in English again? Emir? Emir?
Yeah, it's pronounced
Emirates.
That's the leader of the Turkish. The Turkish, that's what they're called.
It's used all over there.
So this is, it comes from just that. So what does it mean in Hebrew? Lashon Kodesh? It means the center branch, the very, very top. There's a hierarchy. It represents the top. And that's how it's used to refer to the people that are in control. So here as well, we have here that will be left over two or three gar grim berosh omir, arba'a chamisha, four or five bisifeha. Bisifeha means the branch poria, the fruit. You have to read the pasuk backwards. The fruit that will remain on the branch will not number more than four or five, or going backwards in the pasuk, or the berries that remain upon the tree will not number more than two or three. Ne'um Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So this pasuk tells us again that who will survive? The survivors will be isolated individuals here and there. We compare them to unmature grapes or immature olives or berries or fruit. Okay, another expression, fruits. Fruits are not necessarily berries, they're not necessarily, it's a different term. Fruit along on the branch of a tree, that is what will remain from the Jewish people at the time when Sancheirif conquers the Malchus of Yisrael. That's the simple interpretation of this pasuk. Again, the pasuk is addressing the survivors of the Malchus of Yisrael. The previous two psukim described, or the previous one pasuk described in detail, described the complete conquest of the Ma'aseres HaShvatim. There will be three waves of conquest, or you can learn some general description of who first easily cut with his arm, one arm will gather, the second arm will cut, and then he'll go after any survivor. And who will remain? The next pasuk tells us there are going to be a few isolated individuals that escape and will survive in the land. Fine, that's one interpretation. The other interpretation is this pasuk Vav, is not referring to the survivors of the Jewish people. It's referring to the survivors of Ashur, of Sanherib's army. After they succeed in conquering the Malchus of Yisrael, they proceed to conquer the Malchus of Yehuda. And indeed, most of the Malchus of Yehuda does fall to under their hands, with the exception of Yerushalayim. And as they are poised to conquer Yerushalayim, we learned this so many times, suddenly the night before, the entire army drops dead. They die on the spot. Malach comes, takes their lives, the neshamas are burnt. So how many soldiers were there? There are many midrashim, 400,000, 900,000, over a million, barely midrashim, many opinions, but the entire army is wiped out. How many will survive from the army of Sanherib? So if you remember, we learned back a couple of psukim, the number of people who will survive will be like the number that a child can write. The same mispar, a yeled can write. What is the, so we do, there were many interpretations of what that meant, and many of those midrashim they take this pasuk to supplement the meaning of the pasuk there. We learned then a child can write the letter yud. Right, the smallest letter of the alphabet is the letter yud. You just make a little teeny dot, that's a yud. So that's how many people will survive from the army of Sanherib. Another interpretation was a vav, a line. A child can write a straight line. A straight line is the letter Vav, is the letter 6. 6 will survive. Others focus on this pasuk, and they say it means 5. They only focus on the word Shnayim Ushlosha, 2, 3. 2 plus 3 equals 5. 5 people will survive. Another opinion, a fourth opinion, says we focus on the end of the pasuk. It says 4 or 5. 4 and 5 is 9 will survive. And another opinion says we add up all the numbers. 2 and 3, 4 and 5, 9 plus 5, 14 people survived the miracle of the death of the army of Sanherib. So you have a whole long list of opinions. Was it 10? The smallest letter of a child, the child can write the letter Yud. Is it 6? Is it 5? Is it 9? Or is it 9 plus 5? 14. Everyone agrees. Who were among the survivors? Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuzaradan, and Sanherib himself was the survivor. He went. That's what we learned. After this, he went to Ararat, where the Teva was. He wanted to convert. All story. He wanted to have a new religion, worship the wood of the Teva. And his sons found him and killed him there. But everyone agrees among the survivors were Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan, and that's why years later. Nebuchadnezzar at this time was a soldier in the army of Sanherib, and eventually Nebuchadnezzar rose to become the world leader and succeeded in conquering Yerushalayim. Okay, so that really concludes this little section. We'll stop here.